The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, again with you for a very interesting week in health, wellness, and issues in alternative medicine today. Glad you're with us. And we have a special guest, one of my colleagues and brethren, Dr. Jared Scowron. Dr. Scowron, are you there?
Hi, Dr. Z. Thanks very much for having me on your show. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, it's really great to have you on. Finally, I've been trying to get you on, and really one of my colleagues on for a long time, so it's well overdue, and we're really excited. We're going to be featuring your book. Tell us a little bit about what prompted you to get into the pediatric field and write a book on the naturopathic treatment of pediatric conditions.
You know, that's a great question. I'll tell you, ever since I was little, I wanted to be a pediatrician. And, you know, some kids want to be firefighters, others want to be astronauts. But when I started looking at doctors and I started talking to pediatricians, I saw that they really weren't doing what they wanted to do. They wanted to help children and make them healthy, but it just turned into a world of vaccines and antibiotics. And I realized that the only way for our children to live healthy and to be healthy was with naturopathic medicine. And so I've been practicing and have a pediatric practice myself. And what parents were looking for was a resource, because there wasn't anything out there. There was nothing for them to go look at if their children had diarrhea or if they had colic or if they had eczema. And they were looking for a book, and that's really why I wrote it down. The parents wanted it, so I did as much research as I could and put it all together, and we now have a textbook that's entirely science-based for natural children's health.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And I know you're an alumnus and of National College of Naturopathic Medicine. You know, even though I've been doing the show for years and people always hear, you know, Dr. Z, naturopathic physician, I have a feeling that a lot of people don't even know what that is.
Yeah.
Much to my dismay. So can you set the record straight and tell us a little bit about your training and, you know, your schooling at the National College and what naturopathic medicine is?
Sure, and I think first off is we live in a medical world of specialists. Everybody has their PCP, but also their cardiologist and their gastroenterologist and their OBGYN. But what everybody also needs is their naturopathic physician, because they are truly the most educated professional in natural medicine. And so if you're interested in natural medicine, you want to go to the best. And naturopathic medical doctors or naturopathic physicians are trained in special medical schools. So every naturopathic physician goes through college, gets their bachelor's, takes their pre-med courses. I took my MCATs, and you go to a special naturopathic medical school. It's 4 years. You learn your anatomy, you learn your physiology and your pathology, but then you really get to the heart of everything natural, where you learn everything about nutrition and herbs and homeopathy and all the wonderful tools and modalities that are out there. And, of course, afterwards, naturopathic physicians take national board exams and get licensed by their individual states. So myself in Connecticut, we've got our Department of Public Health that licenses us and make sure that we keep up on our continuing education. And, you know, it's a great place to practice because insurance accepts us and pays for us, and we can order lab tests. And really the biggest difference between us and a conventional doctor is what we use to keep people healthy. And instead of pharmacy and drugs, we use natural medicine. So it's a wonderful education, and it's really a great thing to do. So I hope everyone goes and gets their specialist.
You know, what's interesting is how you approach these myriad conditions in your wonderful book, which was put out by, CCCN, which press was it?
That's a CCNM Press.
Right, and that's
CCNM
certainly
is
available. Media. We'll give that information out and stuff about your practice as well towards the tail end. But, you know, how we approach things is very, it's very different. You know, we try to get to the same destination, which is health and helping our patients, but we come at it from a widely different perspective, and a lot of that is steeped, I think, in our philosophical differences between that, ourselves, naturopathic physicians, and even orthodox doctors, or even green, what they call green allopaths, which mm-hmm. we can talk about. But tell us a little bit about, you know, I think, what's the number one reason why folks, you know, parents bring their kids to the doctors, and how do you as a naturopathic physician approach that?
You know, I'll tell you, the parents bring kids to their doctors because they love their children and they want the best for them. And a lot of parents, and the parents who come into my office, don't want to give their kids drugs unless it's absolutely necessary. And then, of course, that's I believe that 100%. If we have an emergency, that's where conventional medicine shines. But most of the time, if a child has a cold, or if a child is hyperactive, or if a child has eczema, you're not going to get to the solution through conventional medicine. And what I tell parents is that, are you looking for a cure, or are you looking just to palliate? Because if you've got eczema, like a lot of my kids do, you put steroid cream on them, it'll go away for a week, and it'll come right back. So they're really looking for a natural alternative for so many conditions. And the top 10 things that I see in my office, we see plenty of ADHD, we see plenty of stomach issues and colic and IBS, diarrhea, constipation, we see plenty of eczema, plenty of asthma, and of course autism now is a huge epidemic on the rise. And there are so many great ways to naturally treat it that are a cure. And really, that's what parents are looking for. They're looking for a cure because they want a happy, healthy child.
Right. We want to talk about some of these things. So let's talk about asthma. That's something that we see is so prevalent in the inner cities. But even as our indoor air quality diminishes with people that dump various carpet freshening things on their carpets, and we have lots of pets and wood-burning stoves and forced air heat, and it's the winter time, the windows are closed. You must see quite a bit of asthma in your practice.
There's so much asthma, and over 7 million kids in America, that's 9.6%, have asthma, and that number just continues to rise. And it's the worst in the Northeast, and that's because of the jet stream. You know, jet stream pushes all the air from the west to the east, and the Northeast is the worst place for pollution, and you know, that's just a fact. So we see so much of it, and a lot of kids, and I'm sure many of the listeners out there, the kids who have a lot of ear infections, you treat them with antibiotic after antibiotic, eventually their ear infections go away and they get asthma, and it's actually the antibiotics that cause that. So not only are we looking at the bad air, not only is it all the chemicals in your house, and like you mentioned, the pets and the wood stoves or the mold growing in your central air ducts, It's also antibiotics that will increase your risk of asthma.
So how do antibiotics do that? Because antibiotics really kill the organisms. How are they linked to asthma?
You know, it's a habit. And, you know, we've all got habits. You know, I before I go to bed, I brush my teeth. And I did that because I brush my teeth before bed every night again and again and again until it's a habit. And I don't even think about it. But chemically, our immune system gets a habit. And for those people who are interested in the immune system, there's two parts known as TH1 and TH2. And what happens is when you take antibiotics again and again and again, your immune system actually changes. It gets into the habit of having antibiotics and for taking those pills. And so the immune system says, I don't have to worry about that. I can go do something else. And what it does is it increases its response to allergies. And so people who take lots of antibiotics actually become more allergic. Huh. They get the big dark circles under their eyes. And the immune system has shifted how it expresses and what chemicals are excreted. And that's what makes asthma.
Now, isn't a majority of our immune system in our gut? I know we've been sort of privy to that information as naturopaths for a long time, but it might be new to the listeners out there thinking, wow, I thought my immune system was my bone marrow and my spleen and my white blood cells floating around in my gut.
No, it's exactly right. And, you know, the body, whoever created our body was so smart because, you know, we need to protect ourselves from the outside, you know, and where do we bring most of the outside in? Well, it's through what we eat. And so much of our immune system is around our stomach and around our intestines because it has to protect from any kind of bacteria or viruses we might swallow when we eat food. And so if you have a shift in your immune system, or for people who have autoimmune disease or even something like asthma or allergies, then the immune system is affected. And when you know, I mean, I'm sure most of your listeners know, if you take antibiotics, that kills all the good bacteria in the intestines, and that will change everything around it, including the immune system.
Right, and that allows more and more. I find that people become more allergic after they do antibiotics for a long time. And,
exactly.
Of course, that triggers so many of these illnesses that you're talking about, eczema, asthma, atopia, various other maladies. So
exactly.
The connection between the gut is very critical.
Exactly.
So what kind of probiotics do you recommend for kids? Because, you know, maybe they don't like, you know, sometimes I see that, you know, maybe the doctor says, well, eat a yogurt. You know, eat a yogurt. That'll give you the good probiotics. But the kid might be allergic to dairy or something like that, which I know you find probably very common in your practice. So what about this conundrum for parents?
You know, that's entirely correct. There's so many dairy allergies or dairy intolerances or lactose intolerances, which are all different. So how do you get your good bacteria? And it's really, nutritionally, you can do it with fermented foods. And you know, the yogurt I see in the research that I read says by the time you buy a yogurt, all that bacteria is killed off. So you're really not getting that much. There are other fermented foods like kimchi or sauerkraut that you naturally ferment, so you can create those on your own. And some of my parents who really like to cook will make those things. But what's easiest for most families, because most families are so busy, is high-quality supplements and supplemented probiotics in a pill or in a powder. Really easy for kids to eat and really easy to take, and boy, they make changes really quick in the body.
Now, what about with this big challenge in the immune system? By the way, if you're just joining us, we have Dr. Jared Scowron on, and he is the author of Fundamentals of Naturopathic Pediatrics. We have him on. Wonderful guest here. What about with this immune system problem? Oftentimes we give, you know, botanicals and herbs to our, you know, patients. Little patients, because people think that, by the way, I meant to ask you, people think that, you know, kids are little adults. I know that's not true, so I'd like you to address that whole thing. But, you know, then we give them these things, and first of all, I find that it's a challenge because many times the kids can't swallow something, and then if we get, like, a chewable version of these particular nasty-tasting herbs, the kids taste it and then spit it out. So how's compliance being a naturopathic pediatrician?
You know, you sound like my parents, which is it's funny because they ask me, they say, can natural medicine help my child? I say it will. It will if they take it, period, because, you know, compliance and not wanting to take things that are gross is a huge part of what we deal with in naturopathic pediatrics because, you know, as an adult, you can force something down, and who said medicine's supposed to take good? So it's a lot of picking and choosing, and what we need to do is find the therapies that work and make sure that they are palatable, because there's a lot of impalatable things. But I've got some parents who are really ingenious that will actually take ice cube trays and some sugar-free juice and make little ice cubes with the supplements in them for their medicine, or others that'll take some sugar-free Jello and make Jello cubes with their medicine, and they're extremely ingenious on how they give it because they know it's important. And they know
so herbal Jello shots.
Exactly.
I like that idea. That's great. And then I know I taught my kids, which are now they're teenagers now. I taught them how to swallow a long time ago. I practiced with little tiny capsules and applesauce to get it to slide down, and got over that gagging reflex. But it is quite a challenge. I know that with many kids that just can't swallow, even adults that can't swallow a lot of the pills and supplements that often are prescribed, certainly. And you know, that brings us to children that are unique. Maybe they have autism, or maybe they have ADD or Tourette syndrome, and they have maybe a heightened sensitivity to swallowing or things of different textures in their mouth. So I know you wrote quite a bit, extensive part of the book is on these behavior disorders, and I know many times in mainstream medicine they tend to categorize them and put them in little boxes and give them a label and things like that, and possibly rightfully so. But let's go through your typical hyperactive child that comes to the office. I know there's no such thing as a typical one, but how would you first diagnose someone with hyperactivity? Is there such a thing really as ADHD? And how would you manage that?
Yeah, there's so many kids who get that term or name, as you say, and a big problem I see is the main person who's creating this diagnosis are the teachers, because they've got kids and they're seeing so many in their classrooms, and they want to make sure everybody's behaving, and if they're misbehaving, they'll tell the parents that kid's ADHD and they need some Ritalin. The parent has no choice but to go to their pediatrician and say, hey, the teacher said he's hyperactive, I need some Ritalin. So, you know, there's no test for these things. It's really just somebody's opinion of whether your child is ADD or ADHD based on their hyperactivity level or based on their inability to focus. And so the kids are getting this label when they don't need it. And what we really need to do with these kids is decide, is there really something going on in their brain, or is it just what they're eating? Because when we look at the amount of sugar that are in our child's diets, it's extreme. You know, we go to a birthday party and we eat sugar cake and frozen sugar milk and all the sugar in our juice, and who wouldn't bounce off the walls? And a little tidbit I give my parents is what I call a sugar rule of four, which they may have heard of, because when you look at an ingredient list on a food label, it has sugars, and it has sugars in grams. And I don't know what a gram is, but if you divide grams by four, that's the number of teaspoons of sugar that you're eating. And so if you have a Coca-Cola that has 38 grams of sugar in it, divide that by four, that's 10. That's 10 teaspoons in a can of Coke. So I know how I feel when I eat 10 teaspoons of sugar. So we always start with diet and say, you know, let's look at how much sugar you're really eating.
So beyond the sugar, what about different nutrients that the kids may be low in? Do you see any problems with nutrients that helps them handle the sugar load? Or I know they say magnesium and is kind of Mother Nature's calming agent. And what else do you see in your workup of these? Because I know you're trying to find the underlying cause of why they're feeling like this. And maybe it's sugar and perhaps it's deeper.
No, magnesium is definitely one of the most popular minerals that I give, and especially for hyperactivity. Like you said, it's nature's calmer, and it's entirely true. And, you know, a lot of these kids, and when a kid comes into my office, what I try and do is give them an individualized treatment plan, because every child's a little different. So we'll go through a full battery of nutrient testing. And a lot of the kids are low in magnesium, as you suggested. Magnesium helps calm them right down, and other kids are low in B vitamins, and so we give them B vitamins and they calm right down. And other kids are low in good fats. So I'm sure most of your listeners are familiar with fish oil. And so we give fish oil to a lot of kids and it helps them. And they really need to differentiate between the two types of good oils, which are the EPA and the DHA. And it's that DHA that really helps the brain and calms children down. And, you know, I'll tell you, in a month or two, they're calm, they're getting better grades, they're focusing in school and playing with their brothers and sisters.
Huh. What about the prevalence of heavy metals in children? I was wondering if you've ever seen that as far as a factor as attention deficit disorder.
Oh, that's part of my screen on every child that walks in here, and we live in such a toxic environment. So we screen every child for toxins. We screen every child for heavy metals. And, you know, I'll tell you, your listeners really should get it done, because each and every child that I've ever seen, you know, and we're talking about thousands of kids, have arsenic in their body. And I think it's a really big problem. It's in our water system. It's in the chicken that you eat. And arsenic, lead, mercury, cadmium, so many toxins. And, you know, that's just a handful. There's really thousands of toxins that people have. And, you know, research studies are out there that will test people and notice that there's at least 80 chemicals in every person. And where do we get that? You know, we get it from the air and the water and the food. And there's a website I tell parents to go to, which is scorecard.org, S-C-O-R-E-C-A-R-D.org, and you type in your zip code, and all the toxins that are being put out in your area are listed there for you. So it's a really great thing to do, especially on Halloween.
I'm sure you see ebb and pulses in your practice there after these major holidays, these major candy feasts, that's for sure. Well, what should parents do when their children are not eating really well? Maybe they're averse to vegetables. I mean, you know, I know Hippocrates said food is medicine and medicine is food. I know that's a foundational starting point for many naturopathic doctors and holistic practitioners. And so, you know, we start from the ground up. Here the kid is just junk food and doesn't eat any vegetables. How do you take a kid like that and transform them into this, you know, vegetable eating machine?
it's really tough, and I'll tell you that diet you just described is what's fueling our childhood obesity epidemic. And what I tell parents is this is probably one of the hardest things because it's a change for the entire family. And I tell parents, you have to be the role model. You have to put away the Doritos, and you have to eat the vegetables, and you have to eat the fruits. So your child will see that. And a lot of parents it's a tough change for them. And, you know, if you don't buy it and it's not in the house, then your kid can't eat it. You know, if they're, what did one of my parents say? The child used to be addicted to Doritos. And I always wonder, Doritos, Fritos, Tostitos, they all end in the same. But, you know, they went to the store and said, you know, they're all out. They don't make them anymore. You know, what's a four-year-old going to say? Okay. So it's really about making a family change.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion, because if the kid sees that, you know, his brother Johnny has to eat is eating a certain way, and then his parents are eating a certain way, and he has to eat this, you know, quote unquote special food, that might create some animosity in the family, I guess.
It really does, and you know, it makes it a punishment. And
who wants
to do something that's a punishment? So it has to be something that everybody does and everybody enjoys, and you know, it actually makes everybody more healthy.
What about physical activity? You talked about obesity and children. What's a good way that you get your kids to start moving? Because I don't know. I mean, when, you know, we grew up in a different era. I grew up, you know, I would get out there with my friends after school and get out my hockey stick and just play until I dropped. I'd be out there sledding with all the snow we've been having on the Northeast. Now, the kids are sitting there in front of computer video games and other, you know, technology. They have technology addictions, and they're not moving. What is going on there, Dr. Scourer?
Oh, it's true, Dr. Z. You know, it's... you know, we didn't have video games 20 years ago, or at least to the
intensity. Well, we had asteroids.
Well, that's true. That's true. But, you know, we didn't have 200 television stations. We had a handful. And, you know, kids need to get out and exercise, not only because they need to get some physical activity, but it's also that television actually lowers your metabolism. And the more you watch, the slower you burn calories. You'll burn more calories just sitting there and watching the wall than watching the television. Because of the way your metabolism works. So just like the food, it's about doing it together. It's about having family time. And I know everybody's busy and people have multiple jobs, but you have to carve out a time because, you know, you want to make it fun. You want to make it a habit. And I know other parents who will limit the TV time or the video game time, but put it in the hands of their child to make a decision. So if you say you've got an hour or 2 hours of whatever, but you get to decide when it is. And, you know, obviously if it's before bedtime and the other time, TV's off, video games are off, you're doing other stuff. So if the child's old enough, you know, if they're 7 or older, they probably have a decision and consequence kind of understanding, and give them those, you know, give them that freedom to make their choice. And it helps put it in their hands.
Yeah, I mean, people have, you know, purchased the Wii game and whatever, but I think that just like enables, well, I could see it useful for maybe elderly people who can't get out, or people that are, you know, maybe visually or handicapped in a way, and they want to have some fun activity, they do the Wii thing. But, hey, I threw my back out with the Wii once. I was bowling, and, man, I threw that thing hard.
You got to watch out. But, the Wii is great if it's raining. But, we need to be more in touch with nature. Yeah, I read some study that when children are in touch with nature and they're outside, they're more calm. And, I think we're really getting away, and people don't know what it feels like to have, dirt underneath your feet and, go play and get outside.
Yeah, and I know with that hygiene hypothesis, literally getting in the dirt is very important for our immune system. Have you seen kids that are kind of shut off and not being, in the outside, rolling around in the dog poop and everything like that they do and whatnot, eating dirt, they can actually become less if they don't do that, I believe.
Well, exactly. And then, I'll have mothers take out, open their purse, and they've got 10 bottles of Purell in there. And, you need to expose yourself to the world, or you don't know what's out there. And that's not just kind of philosophical, but it's your immune system. Your immune system needs to interact with these things so it can defend itself. And if you live in a bubble of your house and Purell and everything sanitized and clean, then, when you go out in the world, your body doesn't know what to do, and your immune system doesn't know what to do. And these are the kids that are really the most allergic. And I think it also develops autoimmune disease in the future.
What about we see ear infections a lot in children, and they come in and they're put on multiple antibiotics because I guess the idea is if we sterilize the contents of the inner ear, which the antibiotics would do, we would kill off the particular pathogen. But I always tell people you have to fix the problem, and the problem isn't the abnormal bacteria in the inner ear, it's the dysfunction of the eustachian tube, which is the drain that, whomever designed us gave us this wonderful drain to drain continuously the contents of the ear. And if the drain gets clogged, it's analogous to if our tub is clogged. We take a shower, and the next person takes a shower, and the water gets pretty gnarly, so you throw some bleach in there, and then the next person can take a shower, but eventually sounds like a hot tub, but but it's certainly not the way to go about doing it. The way to go about doing it is to fix the drain. Find those things that are disrupting the ebb and flow of the natural fluid in the ear. So what are some of those things that you've seen disrupt the eustachian tube? And what are some ways that you would treat ear infections?
Ear infections make me look like a miracle worker because, like you said, the cure is so easy. And, the bathtub metaphor or the shower metaphor is great because, I don't want my toilet to back up because I know what's going to happen. And even if I pour Drano down it, it still doesn't work till I open the pipe.
Yeah, exactly.
The eustachian tube is the pipe from the ear to the throat, and there's no other way for stuff to get in and out. And if that eustachian tube closes, then there's nowhere for that stuff to go, and it becomes an ear infection. And all we need to do is open up that pipe. You open up the pipe, and everything goes away within a day. And so we have to ask ourselves, what's closing the pipe? And it's actually inflammation. I mean, many of us have had a sprained ankle. Boy, that thing swells up. You can't do anything with your foot. So it's just like your eustachian tube. If that swells up, it closes because it's so tiny. And the biggest thing that causes that inflammation in my practice is dairy. Kids who are sensitive to milk and cheese, that creates the swelling, swells that eustachian tube closed, and they get ear infections. And I tell my parents, just stop eating dairy for a couple weeks, and I'll tell you, the ear infections go away and they never come back.
Wow. And what about other drops? And I mean, we probably use some antimicrobial assistive things that when they have an acute problem. What are some things that you find works in your office there that parents could be listening in and know about?
Well, the most popular one is a combination of garlic and mullein, and they mix that with some oil, and you take those drops and you put them in your ear. and that really helps the ear infection go away. And it's great for kids because they don't have to take it orally. You know, you just put it in your ear. You do want to make sure that you don't have a ruptured eardrum. So, you know, go to your physician, your naturopathic physician or your pediatrician, make sure there's no ruptured eardrum, and then you can use those drops. But I'll tell you, parents love those drops because it makes their kids better, and they're up and they're out of the house and back in school the next day.
What about vitamins? I mean, I know you have a lot of expertise in vitamin D, Dr. Scowron, but I think vitamin A is a kind of a mystical vitamin that people are afraid of, and then there's zinc, and there's controversy around how much vitamin C people should have. Can you comment on a few of those things? And we're going to be taking a break soon, though. But so after Dr. Scowron talks about that, we'll go to a little break there to get some tea. And so go ahead. Tell us a little bit about nutrients that may help children.
You know, vitamin A is probably my favorite vitamin that's out there, and because it works so well in acute infections. The vitamin A is actually used to treat measles. You know, if you work for the World Health Organization and travel the world, you use vitamin A to destroy measles because it's so good at destroying viruses. And so I'll use vitamin A for any colds or influenza, which is a virus, and it's gone. I mean, I've cured mono in 3 days with vitamin A, never mind 6 months. And it's so great, but you have to use high doses. And so I follow the World Health Organization protocol with its high dose strong treatment, which is safe. And but it's definitely high dose. And you know,
we'll talk about that. I hear the music, so I apologize. But
that's all right.
We'll take a break
after.
Okay, we'll take a break and more with the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z when we return with Dr. Jared Scowron.
Listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Hi, I'm Eric Davis, host of Expanding Mind. Join me and co-host Maja Daou each week as we explore the culture of consciousness, spirituality, neuroscience, media tech, and all manner of wonders and esoterica. Expanding Mind streams every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network. Keep your mind open.
South of the border.
Hello, I'm Johnny Mueller, and I have a brand new show called The Expat Files, and it's all about living, working, playing, or retiring in Latin America. I know what it's like to buy land, build a house, start a business. I've been through it in a dozen Latin countries. So, if you're thinking about moving down or you're just curious, be sure to listen in Mondays and Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Down Mexico way.
This is Glenn Ford. Join me and co-host Nellie Bailey every Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for Black Agenda Radio, an hour of news, analysis, and commentary from a black left perspective. That's Black Agenda Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.
Freedom News Hour will bring you up to date on the latest news on the financial meltdown.
Begin restoring local communities. It can happen.
We'll be exploring the issues from a freedom-oriented, small government perspective.
I'm Walt Thiessen.
I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster.
I am Jake Towne.
Join us live Thursday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network, your voice for independent views.
Now we're back with more of the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Dr. Z, Dr. Eugene Zampro, naturopathic doctor, and your host today. Dr. Kamai has the week off, and we have with us Dr. Jared Scowron, a national expert in natural medicine for children, and he's the author of Fundamentals of Naturopathic Pediatrics
and 100 Natural Medicines for Your Child. That's another book that you have, Jared?
You know, my my second book, which is a nice, easy read for parents, is coming out this June from Rodale Press.
Well, we'll have to have you back on when that happens over the summer, that's for sure. And I know you're a professor at the University of Bridgeport, where you teach pediatrics and autism. And quite a funny guy, might I add, too, by the way.
Well, thanks.
Now, I didn't see that you were on Animal Planet recently, or when was that?
You know, that the original was out last year, but I just had some. It continues on reruns. Dogs 101.
Really?
One of my greatest patients, she had mitochondrial disease, and her family shows dogs. And she got so sick that she could only lie in bed. She was about 12 years old. She only could lie in bed. She couldn't go to school. And her dog was so well-trained, her dog would actually bring her food and take her out for walks. And
What's mitochondrial disease, though, before you get way into that story, though, just for folks that might have said that?
Well, sure. The mitochondria are our energy factories. Every cell in our body has little factories that produce energy for us, and they're called the mitochondria. And people who have diseased mitochondria, mitochondrial disease, those aren't working, and so they can't make energy. And so if every cell in your body can't make energy, you've got nothing. You know, you've got no energy. Mm. And like this girl, she was in bed sleeping all day because she just couldn't do it. And she went to Harvard and Hopkins and Cleveland Clinic, and they didn't have any answers for her. And you know, she fit perfectly into the natural model because what we believe is put the good things in and take the bad things out. And she didn't have enough good things for her mitochondria to work. So we gave her exactly the vitamins she needed, and she bounced back. And, you know, she went off to showing her dogs in the dog contest again and win an award. And Animal Planet picked up on the story, and they loved it so much they put her in the Dogs 101 episode.
Oh, that's wonderful! What a great! I got to watch that. That's on. People can see that on YouTube, that clip or whatnot.
Yeah, you know, I've got it on my YouTube site, which is Dr. Scourin, and it's also on rerun. So if you catch Dogs 101, it's the Afghan Hound episode in season two. So it's still showing out there.
So Scourin is, for those taking notes out there, is Skowron. I knew you were a good guy because your name ends in an R-O-N, and so does mine, by the way, Zamperone.
Yeah, it's actually Latin for good guy.
Is that right?
Yeah, I did my research.
So tell us a little bit about autism. I've been the second half of the show because it's such a complex issue, and I know you've made great strides even at the University of Bridgeport Clinic and working with these children. Such a complex syndrome, not even really a disease. People really can't put their finger of what's going on, and there seems to be no cure because in looking for the magic bullet, which many times mainstream medicine does, they're not getting it because it's multifactorial, I would assume. So why don't you talk a little bit about autism from the naturopathic perspective and your work with it, and what are some ways you've helped some actual clients?
You know, it's interesting, you know, to be around in this period of time because autism is an epidemic, literally. You know, 20 years ago, only 1 in 10,000 kids had autism, but now 1 in 58 boys have autism, and it's gone from a rare condition to almost 2% of our male children. And, you know, like you said, we don't know.
We don't know
what's going on. We're just getting little bits of information here and there. And what I do, again, put the good stuff in, take the bad stuff out, and a lot of these kids are affected, as you said, in multiple parts of the body because their liver can't detoxify, so they're filled with mercury and lead, and their digestive systems can't digest food, and so, you know, they have nutrient deficiencies, and their brain has imbalanced neurotransmitters or brain chemicals, and so they can't learn how to talk or sleep through the night or learn how to go to the bathroom, you know, toilet training. So it affects so many things, and our treatment ranges from helping their digestion and changing their food and killing off candida in their intestines, all the way to balancing their neurotransmitters, giving them the right vitamins, putting them through detox, to get the mercury out of their body. And a few years ago, the parents were saying to me, "Geez, there's so many vitamins that I got to give my kid." And so I formulated a vitamin called Spectrum Awakening for autism, and we just finished a clinical trial with it, and it's done really well. So, we're making baby steps, and hopefully we'll find that thing soon in the future.
What about the whole vaccination debate, Jared? What can you tell people about? Because I'm sure, I remember you were actually lecturing, just actually recently last week, and I stayed and watched, and you said that, the average pediatrician, they have all this training and whatnot, but folks come in and they want to know about should they vaccinate their kids or not, and maybe they're
right.
Giving out a lot of antibiotics, and they don't seem to, do what they love to do, which is really, really treat the kids, and that's probably because they can only spend, 10, 15 minutes with each kid, and how much detail can you do? But a naturopathic doctor has more flexibility in their ability to really understand and hone in many, many facets of mind, body, spirit going on, and even family dynamics and environmental things like we talked about. So what about the vaccination issue?
Well, vaccines are such a highly charged issue, but, let me give your listeners the facts right here.
Thank you.
The number one fact is that vaccines are too financially charged and politically charged that you'll ever see any blame put towards them. Because if somebody ever said, vaccines cause autism, pharmaceutical companies would get sued out of business. And so it was actually made a law. If you all remember the Patriot Act back in, I think that was 2004, one of the senators who owns a large percent of Merck put at the end of the Patriot Act, you can't sue companies for autism and vaccines. So it's a law. It's a law. And all the research behind it, and that was Bill Frist, all the research is pointing to vaccines not causing autism. But that's entirely politically and financially driven, because when you talk to a mom and a dad who gave their child the MMR shot and that child stopped talking and stopped looking at them and stopped talking and stopped everything, you know what happens. It's not a doubt in my mind. Now, it doesn't happen to every child. I had the MMR vaccine. You probably
sure.
did, too.
Sure.
But I'll tell you, I don't know what's going on, but you just talk to a parent who says that, and there's not a doubt in my mind.
So maybe it's their inability to kill viruses. I actually was doing some reading about a toxin that's generated often in the brain of autistic and other people too, by the way, which is called quinolinic acid, which is a kind of a derivative of tryptophan, and it's kind of like the Mr. Hyde of tryptophan. I mean, have you ever done any reading on that, Dr. Scowron?
I have, and back to how that's partially generated, the measles virus is actually growing in the intestines of these autistic kids. You send a camera down there and you'll see them. And the toxins that are released and destroying the brain, and which then causes autoimmunity against the brain, I think it's the tip of the iceberg of so much, this big puzzle that we have to put together with autism.
Yeah. So besides the vitamin thing and whatnot, what are some other things that parents can do if they have a autistic kid? Like, for instance, I know my nephew is semi-autistic. He's, pretty high-functioning, but he's got some major issues. All this kid wants to eat is macaroni and cheese, and his parents are like, I don't know what to do with this kid. I mean,
sure.
So, I mean, when the rubber meets the road, and it's the day-to-day battle zone of, I have teenage kids. We have our own serious battles, and more battles to come, I'm sure. I dread them teaching them how to drive, that's for sure. That's my thing that's coming up, too. My daughter was just saying this morning, "Hey, Dad, I'm 16 now. When are you going to teach me how to drive?" And I'm like, looking at her like, never.
we need to have a show about that.
Exactly. But tell us a little bit about my question there.
It's tough. You know, I see, not only do I see parents with one child with autism, I see parents with twins with autism, or even three in the family, and it's so hard because it becomes your life, you know, and it puts families through so much stress. I see families broken apart from it, and you know, it's really, really a difficult thing to do, and like you said, these kids will only eat what they want to eat, and if they don't get it, they just won't eat. And so what are you going to do? And, you know, sometimes it's baby steps. And the first baby step is, you know, if you can get your children off of wheat and dairy, you do it. And sometimes that's easier said than done. And the next steps are to get those good vitamins, and get that fish oil, and get probiotics into the child. And the third step is to go through detoxification protocols. But it's, you know, it's really serious kind of detoxification. It's more than some Epsom salt baths and a little clay on your body. And you really need to see a specialist. So I urge anybody who has a child on the autism spectrum is to see a DAN doctor or see somebody who specializes in these things, because the biggest enemy is time. And the longer you wait, the worse the prognosis gets. And, you know, I see kids, any kid before the age of 14, before puberty, they really, really do well. But after puberty, there's something in that brain that just solidifies. And, you know, it's tough to change after that.
Speaking of puberty, what about all our kids that have acne? I'm sure you see quite a number of teenagers that are often scarred with acne, and it's such a sensitive time of your life where, you know, looks are important and relationships are beginning and whatnot, and this poor kid is just, you know, scarred beyond belief with acne. There's some simple naturopathic solutions to this. Now, the allopaths will often, again, resort to the antibiotics as a treatment for the acne. How would you deal with it as a naturopathic physician?
Well, like you said, you know, who doesn't have acne? Who doesn't even have acne as an adult? And
sure.
What we do with kids, first off, is dietary changes. And there were some studies out of Harvard that found that skim milk and other dairy products are the biggest cause for most kids' acne. And, you know, you stop that, and a lot of kids, the acne will go away. But the supplements even add on top of that. And I use a lot of niacin, which is vitamin B3, which works better than the antibiotics. Or I'll use vitamin A and vitamin E and zinc and vitamin D and so many great things to nourish the skin and clean the skin, you know, with different astringent herbs. So it works really well.
That's interesting, because some of my biggest arguments have been with dermatologists who say, oh, there's no link to, you know, we're getting close to Valentine's Day now, there's no link to chocolate and acne, or there's no link to diet and acne. What you eat has nothing to do with the excretions of your skin.
You know, this is exactly why I wrote the book, which to have all that research in one place. I mean, if Harvard is doing study on thousands of kids that show food causes acne, why doesn't everybody know about this? And I think it's because most doctors don't have the time to. You know, they're working all day. They're seeing patients every 5 minutes. They don't have the time for this. And all they remember is what they went to school with 20 years ago. But all this new research is coming out, and that's what the book is for. It's a great place for parents to get info.
Where can people get the book? Tell us a little bit about how the book's broken down and a little bit of the dynamics of the book.
Well, you know, the book lists over 100 children's diseases and health conditions and almost 1,000 research articles. And, you know, it's broken down by category, so heart conditions and lung and conditions, infections and GI problems. And it's great because parents can just open the book and we've got everything in a nice table or chart. So if your kid has colic or diarrhea, open to the section and it says right there what to give, what the dose is, and it's nice and clean and really easy to use. And my favorite part of the book has to go to the vitamins, which I know we were talking about before the break, because how much vitamin do you give to a child?
Right.
You know,
Let's talk about that.
It actually depends on their age. And so in the front of the book, I've got a list of every vitamin, every mineral, and how much is safe, how much is effective by the child's age. It's a wonderful table I've never seen anywhere else.
Because kids really aren't little adults.
No, they need more things than some adults. I mean, when you're growing, you need all the nutrients to build those bones so you can grow from, you know, 2 feet tall to 6 feet tall, and that's a lot different than an adult. So different times need different nutrients.
Why are we seeing so many of these adult diseases in in children today? Is it because of a lot of the factors we've discussed with the diet and lifestyle things, or are there other reasons that you've seen in your research?
You know, that's the primary reason, and we look at, you know, childhood obesity. It is defined by the 95th percentile, which means there shouldn't be more than 5% of kids who are obese. But right now in America, 18% of kids between the ages of 12 and 19 are obese. And those levels were actually changed in the year 2000. The American Academy of Pediatrics said, whoa, there's too many fat kids. They're skewing our curve. You know, and if we went back to 1999, there'd probably be 25 or 30% of kids that would be diagnosed as obese. And it's sad because in America we all think that we have the best health care. But in actuality, we're ranked 47th in infant mortality in the world, and we're ranked 49th in life expectancy. And why aren't we in the top 10 or the top 5? And it's really because, I think, of our diet. And, you know, kids are getting type 2 diabetes. Kids are getting high blood pressure and high cholesterol. And, you know, I've got a niece who weighs 250 pounds. And it's from the diet and the lack of exercise.
What are some signs that parents, like if you just looked at your kid, could you tell that a kid was heading towards diabetes? Not just by their girth, you know, their body mass index or whatnot, but are there other signs that naturopaths look at? You know, their nails, their gums, their teeth, their hair. I mean, what would you say to people?
Well, you know, like you, I'm sure, look at in your practice, there's so many different physical exam findings that parents, you know, don't know about,
right,
that we can see. And, you know, it's great things that we take a look at. Like you said, most physicians are in with you for 5 minutes max. And, you know, in my office, we take at least an hour with every child and talk about everything that's going on in their diet and take a look at them really, really closely, because every child's special and they deserve the best.
So I've noticed in looking at kids, for instance, a couple diabetic kids that had those red little skin tag things growing on their neck.
Oh yeah,
and I remember reading somewhere that was related to blood sugar dysfunction. I can't remember. I mean, I went to school so long ago, but and then, you know, dark circles under the eyes often mean, you know, they sell cosmetics for that, but, you know, like leaky capillaries. So I figure if the capillaries are leaking underneath the eyes and giving these big raccoon eyes, then maybe there's leakiness in other places in the body, possibly, like the gut or the brain. I know some people call ADD leaky brain syndrome. So have you seen any of these things in your practice that you could share with some of the parents there?
Oh, sure, all the time. You know, the dark circles under the eyes is one of the most common ones, and skin tags are common, and a lot of adults have the diagonal crease on the earlobe, and that's a sign of heart disease. Most kids don't get that. But if your child has really bad heart disease, and these are usually genetic or congenital things, their fingertips will actually become like a club, like a big sphere. So that's not all that common. But if you're seeing changes in your child that aren't normal, you definitely want to have them looked at by a specialist.
One kid I just saw last week in my office, he came in because the backs of his ears, I'm sorry, where the ear meets the scalp, the mastoid there, it kept cracking and bleeding, and the mother kept putting bag balm on it and crack cream and all these things like that, and it didn't seem to be getting better. And, you know, he also had a little bit of eczema, which I'd like you to talk about in the last couple minutes of the show here. Is there a connection between the skin and eczema and what we're eating?
Yeah, there is, you know, and I wish more people understood this. So I tell all of my parents, because, you know, we're made like a bagel, because our outside, the skin, it wraps all the way through our mouth, all the way through our intestines, and out the other end. And it's not only till you know, if you had a bagel, you can look in the center of the bagel, and it still looks like the outside. And it's not only till you break it open that you see something different, like our hearts or our lungs or our liver. And whatever is going on the outside skin is wrapping down through the mouth and the stomach and the intestines happening under there. And most of the time, it starts in there. And we can have a lot of inflammation that's caused by food. We can also have a lot of mold or fungus in there. I mean, fungus loves to grow in dark, moist areas. And what's darker and moister than in our intestines? So when it grows in there, it then starts to wrap out and cause eczema on our skin. So anytime that we're treating the skin, we as naturopathic physicians always treat the stomach, the intestines, the digestion, and the food. And that's what causes the, that's what gives you a cure. We're not just palliating with steroids or a cream. We get a cure.
Right. It's not a steroid deficiency, just like headaches aren't an aspirin deficiency.
Exactly.
There's things going on. And what about the difference in the last thing we can talk about before we sign off here? What about the different type of allergies? Because I had a kid that was getting hives and things like that, and they went to the conventional allergist, and the allergist ran everything to dust and mold and even certain foods and eggs and whatnot, but it really showed nothing, and those were the IgE class allergies, E like emergency. And I decided to do what's called the G's, which I don't know why the Orthodox doctors don't seem to recognize the G's as much. But when I did the G's, the kid was just loaded with allergies. And upon cessation of those foods, the condition seemed to clear up big time. So why aren't pediatricians running the G's? Why do they just stick with the E's? You have any idea? I mean, you probably are in contact with a lot more pediatricians than I am. I see a lot of rheumatologists, and that's another story. But
this is where conventional medicine has their blinders on, and I wish they'd wake up to it, or maybe not, because I again look like the miracle worker, like you did with finding the IgG intolerances. There's two types of antibodies that our immune system makes. One is called the IgE, as an emergency, as you said, and one's the IgG, like general. And the IgEs are allergic reactions, your hives and your anaphylaxis. And the IgGs are more of a general antibody. And conventional medicine uses IgG testing to look for bacterial infections and viral infections. It's part of the normal thing they do every day. But they never test the antibodies to food. Now, your immune system can't tell the difference between a bacteria or a food. If it thinks it's the bad guy, it thinks it's the bad guy, and it creates all these antibodies to attack it. So, you run that IgG test in your office. I run it in the office. It's such a wonderful test because it shows us that the immune system doesn't like a certain food. It thinks that that food's the bad guy, and when that's the bad guy and you eat it every day, your immune system is going to cause problems, and problems that range anywhere from the hives that you saw to hyperactive symptoms and joint pain and so many different things. And I'll tell you, so many of my patients improve when we find those foods that the immune system doesn't like and we stop eating them.
And if you're joining us, we're talking with Dr. Jared Scowron. He's a naturopathic physician and a professor at the University of Bridgeport. And he wrote a fabulous book, which we've been talking about for this hour, Fundamentals of Naturopathic Pediatrics, which, is a specialty field, certainly. And Dr. Scowron in the book talks about asthma, autism, obesity, type 2 diabetes, attention deficit disorder. I love the book because you can turn it and find out what vitamins to give your kids for certain things, certain herbs, many different other modalities like hydrotherapy, which we didn't even have a chance to talk about in the hour here, homeopathic remedies. All these various things have been demonstrated in clinical studies and many case histories he presents throughout the book, which are effective against these common illnesses. So tell us a little bit about where they get the book again before we sign out.
The book's available on Amazon, so you can, just type in Fundamentals in Naturopathic Pediatrics or my name on Amazon. There's also a link to it on my website, and my clinic's website is naturopathicanswer.com because we're always looking for everybody's naturopathic answer.
Wow, great, and fabulous to have you on the program. And we'll give you a call again when your other book comes out.
Well, hey, Dr. Z, thanks for having me on the radio. You've got a wonderful program, and it's an honor to be on here with you.
Thank you. And that does it for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Dr. Kamai will be, actually, I'll be with Dr. Kamai next week talking about arthritis and autoimmune disease, something that I'm passionate about. Take care and stay healthy, folks. Bye-bye.